Translation. I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses, and the destroyer of the further advances in atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destinations. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Sri Krishna is the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. Akila means complete, or that which is not kila, inferior. I'll make a few comments as we read this. Sri Chaitanya Manavishnang Shtapatam in Uttale Swam Rupakadam Yam Nati Swabarantikam Namamish Madhaya Krishna Pishnang Tale Swam Tvaram Swam Tvaram Tale Sara Swadi Dehi Guru Vali Pichari Nem Cheshe Sunni Vali Pishtadam Shnani. The first line, Sri Krishna is the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. So it's plain here that existence has a form. Not just the manifest existence we see around us. Everything has form. We can see, we can touch, we can taste, we can smell, we can perceive it with our physical senses. But the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. So straight away there's attack. It's refuting the idea that the spiritual transcendence is formless, the complete form. So the complete form of the Lord is both the material external manifestation and the internal spiritual potency. The complete form of all existence. When I was reading this, it just struck me as being so complete. Of course, it says it's complete, but Akila means complete. Or that which is not kila, inferior. Ah, kila. A devotee in the community called Akila Shraya. Akila. It reminded me of a pop song some years ago. The kind of chorus was kila, kila, kila. It's kind of some mundane cry, which means inferior. And we're living in the inferior energy. Of course, these days the word inferior is considered a derisive term, because everything in you could say the la la land of attempted. This could go wrong. I would say attempted equality. I don't mean that in any controversial term. But the tendency is to try and make everything equal. There's no material, there's no superior and no inferior. This is impersonalism or voidism. There are grades, obviously, there are grades. For example, this is good quality paper. It's superior. But you look at many books, even books by the BBT, some of the runs to make them cheap. The paper was cheap newsprint, it goes yellow after a year and all the pages fill out. Inferior printing, and you've got superior printing, and you have food which is superior and inferior, quite apart from in terms of actual diet. Those who are more in the mode of goodness appreciate superior food insofar as it's life-giving, nourishing, energizing, and it helps to keep one or lift one to the mode of goodness. Whereas others who are attracted to what they consider superior food, tamasic, decaying, intoxicating, rancid, putrid, they consider that superior. So it's a question of, it is subjective, yes. Our whole perception of everything is subjective. Even our perception of transcendence is subjective. But as explained here in the verse, for the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual faction, Krishna grants their specific destinations. So there's different destinations according to one's particular taste. So in one sense, one could say there is no absolute gradation of what's superior and inferior. But certain things lead to degradation and other things lead to elevation. So depending on our choice, do I want to be degraded or do I want to be elevated? So inferior and superior is there. Of course, there's a whole, we could take the whole class discussing inferior and superior. It does depend upon one's intention, what one can consider superior or inferior. Certain activities to facilitate my desires, I consider superior, but in the bigger scheme of things, they're inferior. They will drag me into lower species and chain me to the repetition of birth and death. That's inferior. Whereas superior will be activities which lead me ultimately to render service, not to the material energy, but to the Lord and his pure devotees. So anyway, here we go, next sentence. I should perhaps read the whole thing all the way through, otherwise we won't get to the end. Lord Sri Krishna is the complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. Akila means complete, or that which is not kila, inferior. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, there are two kinds of nature, prakriti, namely the material nature, and the spiritual nature, or the external and internal potencies of the Lord. The material nature is called apara, or inferior, and the spiritual nature is called superior or transcendental. Therefore, the form of the Lord is not of the inferior material nature. He is complete transcendence, and he is murti, or having transcendental form. The less intelligent men, who are unaware of his transcendental form, describe him as impersonal Brahman. But Brahman is simply the rays of his transcendental body, yasya prabha. The devotees who are aware of his transcendental form render him service. Therefore the Lord also reciprocates by his causeless mercy and thus delivers his devotees from all distresses. Thus pious men who follow the rulings of the Vedas are also dear to him, and therefore the pious men of this world are also protected by him. The impious and the non-devotees are against the principles of the Vedas, and so such persons are always hampered from making advances in their nefarious activities. Some of them who are specially favoured by the Lord are killed by him personally, as in the cases of Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, and Kamsa, and thus such demons get salvation and are thereby checked from further progress in their demoniac activities. Just like a kind father, either in his favor upon the devotees or his punishment of the demons, he is ever kind to everyone because he is the complete existence for all individual existence. He is the complete existence for all individual existence. So Prabhupada comes up with the little phrases, the little lines which are, there's a lot in there, like little sutras. So there's more to read in the purport, but just let's consider this. Prabhupada said, the Lord is kind to everyone because he is the complete existence for all individual existence. What does Prabhupada mean here? The complete existence for all individual existence. Throw it open to you. What do you think? Any reflections on that?
Oh. Well, we're all little jivas, we're all individual jivas. We all experience our own little existence, but he's everything. He's complete, so if we connect to him, then we're connected to everything, complete existence.
That's nice, yeah. Anyone else? This can be added to unlimitedly.
Okay, here's my speculation. No, I mean, this is what I thought of as a Chintabeda Veda Tattva, simultaneous oneness and difference. The Lord is the fire, and we are the sparks of the fire. So obviously, he's the big one, but we are of the same quality, but the quantity is different. So he is the origin of all things, and in that sense, he is everything. And yet, we are marginal, and yet we are separate. So it's not one, and it's not completely different, it's somewhere in between. That's how I understand that sentence.
Anyone else?
He is all existence, and yet that all existence accommodates individual, separate existences, and yet they're all connected to him, whether we know it or not.
Good. Yeah. Anyone else? Any ladies? Gentlemen.
Well, I take it to mean... It's an unusual... I take it as being an unusual way of saying he's the source of all existence, or he's the cause of all existence. He's the cause of all causes, so any other existence has its basis in him, whereas he has... He doesn't have to go... No one is the basis of Krishna, but everything else is based on Krishna. So I just take it that's what it means by the existence of existence.
Yes. Yeah.
Just from the Bhagavad Gita, where it says... all serve me accordingly. That so everyone, no matter who it is, every individual or every individual existence has to serve the supreme existence. So the reciprocation has to be there from the supreme. Yeah.
Yes. Behind you. He's behind you.
Came to my mind that whatever we choose, the Lord will completely support us in our decision, that his complete existence in individual, whatever individual chooses, he will support his Paramatma and follow him, so wherever he chooses to go, hell or heaven.
Yes, that's good. Of course, not so good in some cases, but yes, the overview is good. Anyone else?
Yeah, what comes to me is that God is like the inclusive being, and we are the included.
Which being? The
inclusive.
Inclusive.
Yes, yeah. And we are included. But we don't realize that we are included. We feel excluded. Like we feel like we are not part of the creation, or like we are something else. No?
Yeah, yeah, we do. I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And was there anything from the ladies wanted to say?
I did recognize, yeah.
Yes, sorry, we kind of...
The Om Punam. So where also Krishna says, explains how he is the complete and all existence. So, and we are the individual. So I take it from that verse, yeah.
Yeah. The first verse of Sri Upanishad, Om Punam. Yeah. Can someone take the mic again? Thank you. Anyone else?
What comes to my mind is that Krishna says that his favor or his punishment is ever kind to everyone with this. So that means that he knows past, present, and future. And the jivas, they play like they know present, future, and the past. So I think that's what at least keeping me in the false ego. And I think that sentence is just describing that we should trust the path in Krishna's guidance.
What's the last bit? Should try?
Trust the path and the Krishna's guidance.
Trust, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Everyone's got their... I mean, this is a good topic for an essay, isn't it? Reflect on this. It gets to churn our understanding, introspection. So many points that Prabhupada makes in this purport. He is the complete existence for all individual existence. And there are unlimited individual existences. Unlimited little jivas just like me. Just as much as you sitting there looking at the world around you. There are billions and billions. Well, not billions. It's inconceivable. The Lord's energies are unlimited. Probably not these days, but there was a time when we'd sit here in class, and not just the devotees were sitting here, but there were cockroaches under the floorboards, and mice behind the skirting boards, and a cat that used to prowl around looking for bits and pieces to catch. But just in this room, so many, and who knows who else there is here we can't even see. A famous time when Prabhupada, there was some program going on, and there were especially one in London, what was it called, Conway Hall? And there was a very low turnout, not many people in the audience, and devotees were afterwards were saying how, oh, what a shame nobody came. And Prabhupada said, oh, you did not see Narada Muni. You didn't see. And Prabhupada had the vision to see. So who knows is, you know, around. Who knows? Who knows? And the Lord is there on the altar, right there. Do we have the eyes to see? Sometimes the Lord reciprocates in extraordinary ways, and we appreciate. I mean, the devotees can see the Lord. They can sense according to our purification and devotion. So here's the complete existence. And Prabhupada says over and over and over and over and over again, he's a person just like you and me. So that throws it, the question back on ourselves, how much have I realized myself as an eternal person? Prabhupada says that one of the big stumbling blocks in spiritual progress is to accept oneself as an eternal person. We may accept it philosophically, but to accept oneself as an eternal person. Not just a consciousness, but an eternal person. We have personality, which is presently covered over. So the Supreme Personality is endlessly affectionate towards his parts and parcels, but he reciprocates with each one individually according to their desire. According to their desire in the conditioned state, he'll award them the body of a cockroach or a mouse or a deva or a demon or whatever happens to be. And also, of course, reciprocation is there in the realm of transcendence. And the last point of the verse is Prabhupada saying, for the transcendentalists who are situated on the topmost spiritual perfection, the Lord grants their specific destinations. So the Lord is the supreme reciprocator. The supremely reciprocative, inconceivably so. His humility is unlimited. His reciprocation is unlimited. All his various qualities, unlimited, inconceivable, unlimitedly inconceivable. The Lord is also, in terms of contradictions, he's the supreme contradiction. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is very far. He's very near and very far as well. He's personal and impersonal. All these different aspects of the Lord. He's the supreme contradiction. And yet, within all those different qualities, the basis is his loving quality, his desire to reciprocate with the jiva. And that's why we're here. Krishna simply reciprocated with our own wayward desire. We can't blame the Lord. Why do bad things happen to good people, as the question often arises? Well, we're simply receiving a taste of what we've given out. The Lord reciprocates. The Lord reciprocates. Whereas the pure devotee, he reciprocates with the desire of the Lord, and not necessarily does he reciprocate with the desire of the individual jiva, because the pure devotee gives us what we need and not what we want. So let's continue with the purport here. The Paramahamsa stage of existence is the highest perfectional stage of spiritual values. Well, the word comes in again, para, para, the supreme. That supreme nature. Para Bhajakacharya Paramahamsa. The Paramahamsa stage of existence is the highest perfectional stage of spiritual values. According to Srimati Kunti Devi, the Lord is factually understood by the Paramahamsas only. As there is gradual realization of the transcendence from impersonal Brahman to localized Paramatma, to the personality of Godhead, Purushottama, Lord Krishna As there is gradual realization of the transcendence from impersonal Brahman to localized Paramatma, to the personality of Godhead, Purushottama, Lord Sri Krishna. Talking of obeisances, when the curtains open, we should really be offering our obeisances. Not sitting there and just looking at the curtains open. The whole point of these verses is obeisances. There's seven verses here, one after another, where obeisances are being offered. Let's look at it. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Next verse. "Again, I offer my respectful obeisances under the form of complete existence and transcendence." Next verse. "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto he who is the associate of the members of the Yeru dynasty." Next verse. "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna." Next verse. "Let me offer my respectful obeisances again and again unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna." Who's sitting on the altar? That was my edit. Added. "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna again and again." How many was that? One, two, three, four, five, six. Six sets of obeisances. Why? Why so many obeisances? Why? Any comment on that one? Surrender? Yeah? To understand our subordination to the Lord. Obeisances? Less ego when we put our forehead on the floor. I'm a bit deaf, you have to excuse me. Yes. Obeisances. Comes from the word. Okay.
Just to express our love.
Express our love. Oh, those are advanced obeisances. Yes. Go on. Okay, you got the mic.
To remove our pride.
To what?
To remove our pride.
Remove our pride. Bibu?
To show our respect.
Oh, to respect. Okay. There's no right or wrong answer. We, you know, all these are different facets of the same mood.
As we can see, the obeisances is paying Shukadev Goswami. And I think he also wanted to show that even in his stage of perfection, he's paying obeisances because he knows that he's dependent on all of the devotees and all the other aspects and people that he paid obeisances to.
Offering obeisance is a sign of advancement. It might initially be a ritual. It might be ritualistic. Oh, it's a ritual we do. But actually, it's one can't get anywhere unless one has the internal obeisances, which is expressed externally. Obeisances comes from the root noun obey. Obey. It's the same root. So obeisances means I'm obeying you. And we offer obeisances before the deity, this is interesting, we don't chant the glories of the deity immediately. What do we do when we offer obeisances? We come before the Lord And it's almost like we, thank you. It's almost as if we're showing our calling card. We come before the Lord. And Krishna says, well, who are you? I'm Vishnupadaya. And we verbalize. That's good. Oh. And we verbalize our allegiance and submission to the Acharya. And as they say, as the Bhagavatam says many times, you have to. I'm not a scholar, so I couldn't quote the verses. But one can't approach the Supreme Lord directly. It's through his pure devotee. And that's our link with Krishna. It's the grace of Krishna's pure devotee. So obeisances are important. Not just in coming on the temple room, not just when the curtains open or close, but also when we perform kirtan. We chant the pranam mantra to our acharya. No matter who our guru is, Prabhupada's our acharya. We chant his offer obeisances to him in the form of his pranam prayers and then panchatattva. And then we chant Hare Krishna as a service. It's a service. Chanting the holy name is a service. So obeisances are, as has been pointed out, it's to set an example, but above all, Sutta Goswami is recognizing his complete dependence on the Lord for him to answer these questions. And everything we do, we're dependent on the Lord, even every breath we take. It's dependent upon the Lord. And when we do a service for the Lord or his devotees, we're dependent on his mercy. We're here by his mercy. We're reading Bhagavatam by the mercy of the Lord and his pure devotees. So obeisances can't be stressed enough. Before, Prabhupada was mentioning the various demons who Krishna curbs their demonic tendencies by disposing of them, killing. In other words, given unlimited time, the demons would. They just continue with their terrible activities. So Krishna curbs their activities. As he said, he destroys the further advances in their atheistic temperament. So they need to be curtailed and cut short. But when Hiranyakashipu was having his reign of terror in the universe, the entire universe, apart from Lord Brahma, came and offered their respects to him. Even Narada Muni. Pranams Maharaj. Everyone was offering respects to Hiranyakashipu. Not heartfelt respects, but out of fear. There's different kinds of respect. The demonic, they demand respect. And if you value your life or your facilities, you may have to comply. Whereas the saintly persons never demand. Even Krishna doesn't demand. He leaves it up to the freedom of the individual. But of course, by refusing to recognize the supremacy of the Lord and engage in his service, then our future becomes is materialistic. We have a continue in the realm of birth and death. So let's read a bit more of this. So Prabhupada's just described the different stages of transcendence, Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. Personality of Godhead, Purushottam, Lord Shri Krishna. And that's when the curtains opened. Similarly, there is a gradual promotion of one's situation in spiritual life. And Prabhupada starts off at a fairly high level. He says, spiritual life of sannyas, kutichak, buhudak, paribhajakacharya, and paramahansa. Kutichak, Bahudak, Paribhajakacharya, and Paramahansa are gradual, progressive stages in the renounced order of life, sannyas. And Queen Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, has spoken about them in her prayers for Lord Krishna, Canto 1, Chapter 8. And I couldn't find it. I was looking in that chapter for this. You know what's referred to? Microphone? Can we have the microphone? Sorry, is it? Again.
Yata paramahansayam muninam mamalapanam bhakti yoga vidanartam katam pashyamahistriya. That this path of bhakti yoga is for the paramahansas, is meant for the paramahansas, the munis. So how can we women understand it? Kunti says. That's okay. What I think it is.
Okay. I was looking in the purport for an explanation of these different stages of sannyas, and it wasn't there. It was in the verse.
That's in the seventh canto.
Yes, yeah. You're the scholar here. I heard that. So that's her humility. That's Kunti Devi's humility. She's glorifying this, the great Paramahansas, and she's a Paramahansa herself. She's more than sannyas. She's a pure devotee. She prays, imagine, she prays for distress. Let it all come, bring it on. It helps me to remember you. Totally fearless. So regardless of the body, gender, colour, race, background, if someone actually surrenders to the Lord and is a devotee, there's no material consideration whatsoever. But it has to be based upon factual realisation. The Paramahansas are generally found among both the impersonalists and the devotees. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam, as clearly stated by Kunti Devi, pure bhakti yoga is understood by the Paramahansas. And Kunti Devi has especially mentioned that the Lord descends Paritranaya Sudinam, especially to award bhakti yoga to the Paramahansas. So ultimately, the Paramahansa, in the true sense of the term, are unalloyed devotees of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has directly accepted that the highest destination of bhakti is bhakti yoga. The highest destination is bhakti yoga by which one accepts the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Those who accept the path of bhakti yoga are the factual Paramahansas. I first came across the word Paramahansa in a book which was going around in the 60s, which had a big influence on my spiritual life, by Paramahansa Yogananda. What was the name of the book? Huh? Autobiography of Yogi. Yes. That was the first time I came across that word. I remember reading the book with rapt attention. Here was a first-hand account of someone on the spiritual path. And I was interested in spiritual life and actually getting a bit desperate. Material life was showing its rather darker side for me. And after finishing the book, this is it. I've got to find a guru. That's the next stage. Because the book was about his meeting and his interactions with his guru. So that was it. And I went on a pilgrimage, and 2 weeks later I met devotees. So Krishna was very kind. He must have seen how desperate I was getting. So this is the key, because one may find an impersonalist, Paramahansa, as Prabhupada says, or a personalist. And there Krishna's reciprocating in the heart. And somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada set up an international facility all around the world for people who are searching can receive the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What an amazing facility. It's a worldwide ashram. International, global ashram. It's remarkable. Remarkable. Not just an ashram, but an opportunity to engage in service. Whether we're living in the temple or outside the temple, there's vast opportunity to render service to the acharya, the devotees, and the Lord. And this is unmatched. This is amazing. Next paragraph, we'll just finish. We're practically at the whistle's going to blow any minute. Since the Lord is very kind to everyone, the impersonalists who accept bhakti This is interesting. Since the Lord is very kind to everyone, the impersonalists who accept bhakti as the means of merging into the existence of the Lord, so they want something. They want to merge with the Lord. Of course, it's not really bhakti. It's motivated. But they'll render service because they want to merge. Merging into the existence of the Lord in his impersonal Brahma Jyoti, they are also awarded their desired destination. He has assured everyone in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Yayata Mam Prapadyante. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, there are two classes of Paramahansas, namely the Brahmanandas, impersonalists, and the Premanandas, the devotees. So we sometimes sing, Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. We never chant, Go Brahmanandi Hari Hari Bo. It's always Premanandi. And both are awarded their desired destinations, although the Premanandis are more fortunate than the Brahmanandis. But both the Brahmanandis and the Premanandis are transcendentalists, and they have nothing to do with the inferior material nature full of the existential miseries of life. Not just miseries of life, existential miseries of life. In other words, existence in the material world is it's full of miseries. And there, and Srila Prabhupada's purport. And it's 5:30. So, any questions or comments any of you would like to make? Prabhu?
Thank you, Vri, for the wonderful class. You just mentioned that we don't say Gauram Brahmanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Called Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Yes,
we do say that, Premanandi. We don't say Brahmanandi, but Prabhupada initiated one of his disciples, Brahmananda. So why would he do that? Why emphasize that?
I don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Brahmananda. Well, I can't think of anyone more personal than Brahmananda. It's almost an anomaly. He was such a personal... His love for Prabhupada was you could... He's an amazing devotee. Love to hear his classes. So personal. Why? And that's a question that anyone can speculate on. I don't know. Who can say? I mean, one devotee, a devotee friend of mine, we worked on some music together many years ago. And he asked Prabhupada, what does my name mean? Havi, what does it mean? Prabhupada said, it means ghee. And he said, ghee? What? What? Ghee? So, I don't know. Of course, it's ghee offered in the fire of sacrifice, but, you know. Just a second, yes? Go.
I mean, this question is interesting because there is a pastime where someone criticized Prabhupada for giving Brahmananda this name. You know this pastime?
Oh, criticized him.
Yeah. I can't remember what Prabhupada's comment was. It might have been, but Brahmananda is one of the Lord Chaitanya's associates. And that's one answer. But I think his Brahma means Krishna's Brahma as well. You know,
he's the Parabrahman, isn't he?
Yeah,
Supreme.
It's not a problem.
So there was a devotee called Brahmananda who was an associate of Lord Chaitanya. Microphone at the back.
But I was just thinking, there's another Brahma, isn't there? He initially got the Bhagavatam.
You mean Lord Brahma?
Yeah, Lord Brahma.
Yes.
So, and he might have been himself in a bliss.
Well, I'm sure he was.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's interesting. Very
so,
good.
Yeah, so that's another Brahmananda. You know?
Yes, yeah. The servant of the head of our Sampradaya,
yeah.
Lord Brahma.
Yeah, Lord Brahma.
Very good.
Yeah.
This is why these. So I mean, it's great that everyone has their little input because we get insights into this the various points. Do you want to use the microphone so the people outside can hear?
Yeah, so also remember that Brahmanda, you know, means Brahma's egg, which means the universe.
Which came first, Lord Brahma or the egg?
In this case, Lord Brahma. So Brahmanda means the universe, translated, which means it's like Lord Brahma's creation, Lord Brahma's egg, Lord Brahma's domain. And you know, Brahmanda, anda meaning egg. So I don't know if that's connected or not. But it's all aspects of the Lord, really, or his, or the demigods and the, his creation. Yeah. Brahmanda.
Yeah, could well be, yes. Any other question or reflections? Just the last, this last point, just repeat again. This whole sequence of verses is they're obeisances. They're recognizing the Lord, and Sukadeva Goswami is expressing his realizations. He doesn't offer obeisances, but he qualifies the obeisance by saying why he's offering obeisances, and explaining that the qualities of the Lord, or the position of the Lord, or the position of the Lord's devotees. He's offering obeisance to the practically to the complete whole, in order to get the blessings of the complete whole, in order to explain the complete whole, which we can't do unless there's blessings. We may have a mental conceptual understanding of something, which is philosophy, but the realization comes when we get the blessings of the complete whole. I'm not the body; it's a concept. Yeah, anyone with a little, because a lot of people can't even understand that, even just as a concept, not the body. So. This wonderful philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, it isn't just information, it's the nature of reality. And we are part of that reality. Associate ourselves with the temporary external reality, forgetful of the eternal internal reality. But the philosophy is there to give us a mental understanding and picture which can gradually be realized by the application described in the pages of the Bhagavatam, and by the grace of the Acharya. Because without grace, we get nowhere. It just remains a mental concept, which can be a source of pride, it can be a source of a monetary income. There's people who do the Bhagavat Saptanas, make money out of it. It can be misused. But to actually receive the essence, it is by obeisance to the Acharya. That's how it's done. So thank you very much for your patience and your input as well. It's been very enlightening and enlivening. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.